Hey, how you doing, everybody? This is Tim Gatto, and this is Tim Gatto Uncensored and Uncut. And today we have John Rachel on the show. And John, are you there?
I am here. How are you today?
I'm doing good. And finally, I got you. No problem.
In this crazy world that we live in, it's good to hear that somebody is still smiling and optimistic that we'll actually make it till tomorrow.
Okay, John, I sent you an email and I said, I don't want to talk about the world situation until we talk about your article. Because...
Really?
The two go together. Do you understand what I'm trying to say?
I understand it completely. Most people don't, and I'm both flattered and awed that you appreciate that that art and worldview and politics and religion it all is wrapped into one. Actually, you know, I mean that's the totality of a human being.
Okay, let's talk about what you wrote in your article. Okay, and what strikes me as astonishing is I served in the military for 20 years, and I understand what supply lines are, and I understand how to support troops, and I understand all the military aspects of a war, okay? Because, I'm a military guy, basically. A long time ago, but I'm still a military guy. Explain to me what you were saying in your article.
Okay, so first of all, the article is called Be Afraid, Be Very Afraid. And that's an allusion to the fact that a lot of what the United States is doing right now is provoking other major powers. The article actually generated a lot of interest. It got published in 6 different magazines, Op-Ed News, Nation of Change, Dissident Voice, Penn Magazine, Greenville Post, and even Popular Resistance, and they've never published an article before of mine. So what I'm referring to is that a couple of weeks ago, in the American press, appeared all of these articles, I mean, simultaneously, and some of the headlines were, Commission, U.S. could lose war with Russia and China. As military edge has eroded, study says, U.S. could lose its next war. U.S. military might struggle to win, perhaps lose war with China or Russia, report says. I mean, and all of these are reputable sources. I'm looking at one from U.S. News and World Report, the Commission, U.S. could lose war with Russia. The U.S. military is no longer clearly superior to the threats that exist around the world and would struggle to win or perhaps even lose a war with China or Russia. Here's the Los Angeles Times. U.S. could potentially lose a war against China or Russia as military edge has eroded, study says. The United States has lost its military edge to a dangerous degree and could potentially lose a war against China or Russia. So anyway, on and on it goes. We have Newsweek magazine. We have CBS News. All of these sites published this article about this study. And I looked at them and I thought, we have the biggest the best equipped armed services in the world. We have the most submarines. We have the most fighter jets. We have the most bombers. We've got enough ICBMs and nuclear missiles to destroy the world 25 times over. We have over 800 bases outside of the United States, spread across the globe. A lot of people don't know we actually have 4,000 bases in the United States, and yet we can't win a war against Russia or China. Now, let's take into consideration some very important facts. Our official defense budget is $716 billion for 2019. Now, that's the official budget. We all know that there are a lot of black budgets. There's programs that don't even get on the official budgetary reporting. So a lot of analysts, very informed analysts, say that actually the defense budget is over $1 trillion a year. This is four times the defense budget of China, at least four times. It is more than 10 times the defense budget of Russia. And yet we can't win a war against these two countries. What does this mean? I mean, it's baffling, right?
So right.
I just stood back. I stepped back from the article and I said, you know what? They left out two very important words. We can't win a war of aggression against Russia. We can't win a war of aggression against China. Well, what does that mean? Well, that means that we cannot attack those countries and expect to win a decisive victory. But the truth of the matter is they can't win a war of aggression against us either. China cannot attack America and win, neither can Russia. So effectively right now we're at parity with them. I mean, to me, and I said this in the article, this is cause for celebration. We should be happy. Nobody can win a war of aggression against the other, so nobody's going to attempt a war of aggression against the other. This is like almost like a message of hope. It is the potential for peace. So what are these reports about? Well, you have to put the reports in the context of the mentality and the official policy of the United States of America. And for that, you have to refer to another document that was released earlier this year. It's called the 2018 National Defense Strategy. And it was released in January. This is something that's required by Congress of the Department of Defense. Every year they have to stand back and say, where do we stand? Where do we stand in terms of the defense of the country? Where does our military stand in relationship to the rest of the world? They formulate what they call the National Defense Strategy. This is then transmitted through the Secretary of Defense as an official report to Congress. The summary is about 11 pages long, and it opens with this: challenges to the U.S. military advantage represent another shift in global security environment. For decades, the United States has enjoyed uncontested or dominant superiority in every operating domain. This is amazing, this next statement. We could generally deploy our forces when we wanted, assemble them where we wanted, and operate how we wanted. Today, every domain is contested: air, land, sea, space, and cyberspace. So what that report, we can't win a war, what that means is we can't land our troops on the shores of China. We can't bombard them sufficiently to destroy their country. And the same thing goes for Russia. Now, mind you, this same National Defense Strategy report, which used to, last year's and the years before, talked about a lot about terrorists and ISIS. ISIS is only mentioned twice in this report. Al-Qaeda is not mentioned at all. Al-Nusra is not mentioned at all. China, in 11 pages, China is mentioned 8 times and Russia is mentioned 7 times. So now you have to stand back and ask, what does all this mean? Why suddenly, now that we allegedly we haven't defeated terrorism, in fact, we've encouraged terrorism, and there are more terrorists in the world now than ever since we've started the war on terrorism. But now, for some reason, what we call the terrorist card is not playing well. Now we have to have some new bogeymen, some new gigantic enemies, and therefore this report comes out saying we can't win a war against China and Russia. And that the report is deceptive on all levels, because For one thing, it presumes that we would want to win a war, that we want to conquer these countries. And that prompts us to really ask, what is the purpose of the U.S. military? What is the purpose of U.S. diplomacy? What is America's place in the world? Who are we to claim that we should be able to deploy our forces when we wanted, where we wanted, and operate how we wanted? What gives us, the United States of America, the right to do that? And why should that be the priority of the American people? Our education system is falling apart. Our schools are in shambles. Our bridges are collapsing. Our roads, our infrastructure across the board is deplorable. We have millions and millions of people going to bed hungry every night. One out of every four children are undernourished in the supposed. And we want to now create a military force which can then conquer and defeat two countries that are across the globe, on the other side of the globe, basically minding their own business. Vis-a-vis our 800 bases, Russia has 12 bases, and 10 of those are in old Soviet bloc countries. Two of them are outside, and those bases were built at the invitation of those countries. China has one foreign base outside of their own national borders. That's in Djibouti in the Middle East, in that narrow strait. So this is why I wrote the article, and I think that's why I got such a tremendous response. I mean, usually an op-ed news, you get 20 comments. I have over 130 comments, and people should be upset. They should be afraid, because what this portends is, this portends another effort by our imperialist, neocon, world domination obsessed government to further gut social programs, education, infrastructure, to further ignore real challenges that affect the quality of life and the quality of the future of our country, at the expense of building an even more colossal and useless military machine. And it only portends, it's like they say, you don't buy a gun unless you plan on using it, right? So the more of the stuff they buy, the more danger we are facing, and especially provoking China and Russia. Neither of them are going to back down. There is no, we just have to read a little history. They are not going to back down. So we're flirting with a major world war with one or two nuclear armed powers that are not going to give an inch. They're not going to become vassals of the United States Empire. And that could go nuclear. And if it goes nuclear, that's the death warrant for all of us. So that's okay. What the article is about.
Let me cut you off here. Okay, sorry. Let's say that, let's just take the nuclear element out of this, okay? Because we know that if we start lobbing nukes at each other, it's the end of the world. It's the end of civilization as we know it. Anyone who survives is going to be back to the Stone Age. I mean, nuclear winter and everything else would probably be the extinction of our species. And, nobody knows what would happen after a nuclear conflagration. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Let's just concentrate on what the neocons think would be just a regular war. With a conventional war with just what we have. And let's say the United States tried to invade China. One of the first things they teach you in war college in the United States military is never, ever try to win a land war in China. And the second thing they teach you is never, ever try to win a land war in Russia. Talk about that for a minute.
Well, I don't, you know, I'm not picturing it as necessarily land invasion forces. I mean, the new wars will be fought with drones and a massive aerial bombardment, the launch of conventional missile weaponry, and so forth. But what's the point of all this? Russia is not threatening the United States, not in any kind of geopolitical, physical sense. China's not threatening. They are threatening us economically. There's no question about that. In fact, let's put this in even a larger context. Saddam Hussein used to be the friend of America. There's wonderful pictures of him meeting with various American diplomats. I was the Secretary of Defense under Bush, shaking hands with him. We actually gave him chemical weapons and biological weapons to fight the war that he was having with Iran, okay? Donald Rumsfeld, famous picture of him shaking Saddam Hussein. Okay, so all of a sudden the United States turned against him. What happened? Why was that? Well,
I know why.
Okay.
I know why. Because he decided to trade oil and not in dollars.
Exactly. Okay. Gaddafi. Gaddafi had given up all of his ambitions to create nuclear weapons. He was basically on a fairly cordial terms with the United States after, you know, there were decades of contentiousness and so forth, but basically he was on fairly cordial terms. There were no imminent threats in either direction. And then all of a sudden, we felt the need to overthrow him. Why?
Because he wanted Africa to adopt the gold dinar and use it to trade oil.
There you go. And what is Russia and China doing right now? They are trying
That's right. They are trying to get away from the dollar and let people use yuan and rubles to trade oil.
They're creating all sorts of bilateral agreements to deal with local currencies. They want to avoid, and why shouldn't they? Because the dollar has been used as a weapon against them. The SWIFT system, all of these systems have been used to hold down their economies, to try to force them into politically unacceptable capitulation. And therefore, they are de-dollarizing. So what is the writing on the wall here? Why the sudden shift in our emphasis, the emphasis of our defense strategy to China and to Russia, coincidentally at a time when they are trying to exit the domination by the United States through the dollar? So there it is. That's the really big picture. I don't know how you get this across to people. I've explained this to people. You know, you're obviously very informed and you're tuned into this, but people don't understand this.
Because they don't want to understand this. They want everything nice and simple, like watching The Simpsons and watching all these reality TV shows, and because they don't have the time to dig into what's really going on in the world. Okay, and so I'm going to do a segue here, which brings us into what's really going on in the world. And what's really going on in the world is this confrontation between Ukraine and Russia. And what's this all about, John?
Well, and it's so obvious. You know, the interesting thing is, I'm very familiar with what just happened a few days ago, which was the three military ships with military equipment on board, trying to go through the straits, and going directly into a zone that had been ruled off limits. all of the restrictions and all the regulations that Russia has in place for governing the naval traffic through that area is all governed by treaties and existing recognized international law and so forth. The Russians basically are just doing their job. It's a very narrow strait. It's very shallow. They also now have that bridge there, and the Ukrainians have been threatening to blow up the bridge now for ever since they started building it. So they have, they were completely with it. But look at the timing of it. 4 days before the G20 summit. And what I didn't know, and I just picked up on an article yesterday, is that there was another incident along these lines further up the coast where the Ukrainian Navy was detaining fishing ships, Russian fishing ships for no apparent reason other than just to antagonize and aggravate them. So you put those two incidents together, and you put it together with the fact that the G20 is happening this weekend, and that's what's going on. But I'm wondering, is this solely a Ukrainian initiative? Is this Poroshenko just out of desperation trying to win back the favor of all his right-wing supporters? His approval ratings have plummeted so low that there's a Ukrainian comedian who's not even running for president, who's polling higher for the next election than Poroshenko. So is it that, or did the United States put him up to this? It's really hard to fathom, but what isn't hard to fathom is how dangerous this is. Because if Russia is provoked too much on this, they're going to sink one of those ships. If one of those battleships or military ship starts heading toward the Crimean Bridge, and it looks like it's going to attempt to damage or to take down that bridge, I guarantee you the Russian Navy is going to sink the ship. So what happens then?
Okay, let me tell you something. First of all, you told us that, and I knew this too, that strait is only 20 feet deep. There is no way. There is no way that the Russian military is going to bring in a battleship because it can't maneuver in that strait. And the Ukrainians know this, okay? And they were willing, in my mind, and this is just conjecture, to risk those three little ships in order to make a point, in order to aggravate tensions, in order to prop up Poroshenko and declare martial law so that he could win the next election, where he's got 10% of the people behind him and his nearest rival has 18%. So if he declares martial law for 30 days, he can manipulate those elections and stay in office. That's what I believe this is all about.
I also think that there may be a deeper level. I mean, we've been trying to find all sorts of excuses, for example, in Congress to supply the Ukrainians with lethal arms. And this has been portrayed in the West, and it's been condemned even by people in Congress as more Russian aggression, even though it's clearly a police action really to protect to understandably protect the assets that are in that area and the smooth and properly regulated flow of traffic. But it's portrayed in the West as Russian aggression, and now there's cries for arming the Ukrainians even more effective and lethal weaponry. So I'm wondering if that's another layer.
Okay.
The timing of it is really suspicious.
Now, the thing is this. Okay. It isn't just another thing he's worried about is he got installed by Hillary Clinton's Undersecretary of State in the Maidan demonstrations, where they had snipers up in the tower shooting everybody and trying to foment this crowd into violence and making the minister, the prime minister, flee to Russia because he knew he was going to get overthrown. And meanwhile, her name was Victoria Nuland.
Nuland. Yeah.
Right. And she bragged that we put $5 billion into that revolution and it worked. So it was an obvious thing that the United States did to Ukraine and, you know, overthrew the government that was pro-Russian and thought that they would get this government that was pro-EU to fall into the line of the Western camp. And what happened was that the people who supported Poroshenko, a lot of them were neo-Nazis that supported Hitler, or their fathers and, you know, their families had supported Hitler, and actually banded together and proclaimed themselves as Nazis. Not fascists, Nazis. And what happened was the two provinces in the eastern part of Ukraine were told that they couldn't speak Russian anymore, even though ethnically they were Russian, and you know, and next thing you know, there's a civil war going on in Ukraine. And who started that? Who was behind that? The United States was behind that. So fill me in on that a little bit. John? Okay, John dropped off for a second. And I wonder why. I wonder why all of a sudden we lost communications. Oh, here he is. Here he is. John, are you back? John. And you know what? You know, I hate to say this, but you know, maybe they're gonna get what's coming to them. You know, it's getting to the point now where I'm 68 years old. I really don't give a shit. You know, if people don't want to listen to me when I tell them what the fuck is going on, well, you know, hey, it's up to you, bud. You know, but young people, you know, the people, not the millennials. I'm talking about young people, 18 years and younger. These are smart little bastards, man. You know, they're smart. They can do shit technically that I can't do, and I've been doing this shit since 1998. I've been involved with computers and shit, and these kids run circles around me, and they are intelligent, and they know what's going on. You know what I'm saying? These kids are like astoundingly smart, and if the human race can just hang on for another 50 years, things might change. You know? That's all I'm saying, John. Are you still there? Hey. Heine.
Hi.
Are you there?
I'm there.
Did you make coffee?
No. Do you want coffee?
Yeah.
Okay.
I enjoyed that show.
That was good.
It was good?
Yeah.
You don't like it.
It was great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't like it.
It was great. No, honey, it was great.
You don't like it. I don't care.
No, it was great. Honey, it was great.
Yeah?
Yeah. What makes you say I didn't like it?